It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is Punk Rock NBA Podcast. Today's guest is a dear friend of mine, Ray Harkins. You may know him from his band Taken, but what I wanted to talk about with him on this episode is podcasts, because he's spent more time in the podcast world than really anybody I know, and probably almost anybody else, period. He's been doing them for about 10 years now, and he's worked professionally in the podcast industry for about 5 years as a, sales rep for Midroll, a big podcast network, and now for iHeartRadio, which you probably have heard of, is a giant media company where he kind of helps them guide their podcast strategy and do media buys and all that kind of stuff. So what I want to talk about with him on this episode is, how do you actually monetize a podcast? How do you turn a podcast into a business? How do you grow the audience? How do you get guests on? How do you get featured on Apple? How do you get sponsors? All that kind of stuff that really nobody ever talks about, but we all know is key to turning this into some sort of a source of revenue, into something more than just a hobby. So he's just a wealth of information on this. So I would very highly recommend, if that's something you're at all interested in, take notes. Seriously, this kind of spells it all out. Before we get into that, I want to talk about a couple things really quickly. Number one, if you're interested in helping the show, there's a few ways that you can do that. First of all, you can share it on social media and tag me at Finn McKenty on Instagram or at Punk Rock NBA on Twitter, whatever you want to do. Second thing is you can support us on Patreon. It is because of the people who support us on Patreon that we are able to do this show. The reason why I say that is because the patrons are how I actually was able to hire our producer and editor, Deanna Chapman. So if you want to get your podcast off the ground, or if you already have a podcast and you just want to do it bigger and better, you should talk to her. There's a link to her website in the show notes for this. Hit her up if you have questions about all things podcasts. You can also get some merch if that's your jam. There's a link to the merch store in the show notes for this. We appreciate everybody's support very much. So thank you to everybody who has supported the show in any way, whether that's sharing it, Patreon, merch, or just listening. We value each and every one of you. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. Raymond Harkins III, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for appropriately identifying me by my full name.
What I wanted to talk about on this show is podcasting, because you have been deep into podcasting for way longer than most people, and you probably know more about it than almost all of us, so I just kind of wanted to pick your brain a little bit about that.
I would love to. I am a podcast nerd. I actually looked, not too long ago, I looked to see when I first published my episode of, well, technically not 100 words or less, because when I first started it, it was called First World Problems. And the first episode I published was September 23rd, 2010. So it's almost been 10 years that I've been doing podcasting.
That's a long time. I started my first podcast, which I did, 50 or 60 episodes of around then. And I felt like that was kind of late to the game. But now I hear people say that they started their podcast 2 years ago, and it's like, well, that was early when podcasts weren't big. And I'm like, really?
Totally. The moment that, because I've interviewed people from a job perspective in relation to podcasts, and just had conversations many, many times over about podcasts. And when people, it's always interesting to hear kind of what people listen to. And when people start their podcast origin story with so I got into Serial, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. All right. And that's fine. It's no
fucking
no
poser.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, cool. So you like the band's third record. Okay, cool, cool. Right. They had two before that. You know that? Green Day has two records before Dookie, just to let everybody know.
That's right.
But yeah, so that's a good jumping off point.
Raymond Harkins III, the podcast hipster. But yes, in all seriousness, absolutely, you have been creating and into podcasts for much longer than most people even knew they existed. Your show, 100 Words or Less, how many have you done now? It's got to be close to 1,000 or some shit.
It's not 1,000, but I appreciate the high number. I think I'm around, I'm definitely approaching 400. I think I'm, like 380, 390. So yeah, it's been, and if you add the other 20 some odd episodes, I'm over 400 of podcasts put out.
Which is a lot, you know. I mean, we can talk about this more later on, but I feel like one of the biggest places where people go wrong with podcast is lack of consistency. You know, they make four of them and then they kind of burn out, and then they wonder why it didn't become successful.
Yeah, and they have a literal term in the industry called pod-teague.
Oh.
And I mean, it sounds so ridiculous to say that, but it's like you are very correct in that. It's like anytime anybody talks about starting something, whether it's a band, whether it's like, you know, hanging out with friends on a semi-regular basis, it's like, well, you got to give it time. And like, ultimately, the arbiter of quote-unquote success should be your enjoyment of the thing. It's like, if you enjoy it, then keep doing it. And if it doesn't like take too much of your day or too much of your mental headspace to do it, like that's, you know, that's what you should be focused on, as opposed to like, I got to hit these metrics in order to do this thing. And it's just like, well, I mean, sure, I guess, like, but if it's not, you know, if you're like being a present partner in your relationship and you're doing all these other things, and it's like, that's fine. That's, you know, still continue that, because that's all I've done. It's like, I've still been able to hold a job. Like some people come at me and are like, oh, so is this podcast your full-time job? I'm like, no, like I never want it to be, because it's still that enjoyable thing that I'm able to do and meet people, you know, across the world to have these conversations that aren't able to take place in any other medium. So it's like, yeah, that's, to me, that's success. It's like, yeah, I get to hang out with friends and people who I admire their art, and then dive into why they still care about what they do.
And as soon as something like that becomes your job, then it becomes your job, which creates a whole other set of expectations and whole other kind of pressure and stuff like that that doesn't exist when it's a hobby, where it's like, oh, that's, if it gets, you know, if the show grows, cool. If it doesn't, that's okay too.
Totally. Yeah. And it's because, you know, when you put something out in the world and when it becomes something that people appreciate, whether or not it's like the biggest thing or the smallest thing, when people appreciate it, that creates some cultural currency that you are able to then, you know, keep it going and keep it relevant to whoever it is that's listening. And I think, to me, that is a sign of success, where it's just like, oh, when people have heard of your thing, whether or not it is something that they are extremely passionate about or not, that's a different story. You can't, you know, you can't control that. But when people are like, oh, dude, I've heard of your show, like, that's really cool, like, I really appreciate what you're doing, and that's, I'm like, okay, great, success. Like, nothing else that I the more resources that are put at a thing, it's going to, you know, get maybe more people to listen to it per se, but maybe those people aren't going to be as engaged, because you're talking about trying to make something that is inherently not meant to be mainstream, you know?
Well, that's kind of one thing I've been thinking about with my podcast now that I'm, as of this conversation, I have released 4 of the Punk Rock NBA podcasts, so not too many, but, and it's off to a decent start. Like I said, you know, I think I got somewhere around 15,000 downloads or so in the first like 3 weeks, which I think is pretty decent, but that's tiny compared to YouTube, obviously. And so that's kind of one of the things struggle would be overstating it, but I'm just sort of recalibrating my expectations, or not expectations even, but just recalibrating the way that I think about 15,000, because 15,000 views on YouTube for me at this point would be a bomb. But I think for a podcast, you know, that's 3 weeks old, that's pretty good.
Right.
And so I'm kind of thinking about, like, as you said, it's not just about the number. It's about who's listening and why they're listening and what kind of conversations I'm having with those people. And I kind of think with podcasting, a podcast listener is more valuable in a lot of ways than a YouTube viewer to me, because it's like you're having a conversation with them. It's, you know, they feel like they're sitting in the same room with you, talking to you, and it's 45 minutes or an hour long. So to me, you know, 15,000 podcast listens is far more valuable than 15,000 YouTube views.
Sure. Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And plus, too, when you are doing what you are doing, where you are, you know, trying to spread your audience across different verticals, whether that's, you know, I mean, what you're doing obviously with your YouTube channel and then your podcast, like, this is just a further extension of the sort of thoughts that you are putting into your YouTube channel. You are just expanding on them and in a different medium. And in turn, you know, whatever, people that watch the YouTube channel are obviously going to listen to the podcast, or people that just listen to podcasts can be like, well, I'll check out one or two of his videos. And like, that's, to me, that is a valuable currency that you are able to, you know, have, because then at the end of the day, people are more endeared to you as a person rather than like this content creator or whatever. People are just like, oh, now I get to know Finn more via this, you know, more personal medium where you're actually able to talk more about yourself rather than, you know, pontificating about, you know, whose logo is the sickest.
Yeah, well, I think that's an important thing for people to think about, creators of all kinds, is, and it depends on your goal, but Adam Amelkais and I talked about this on the podcast I did with him. He said that at one point, you know, he kind of realized, yeah, I've got a lot of followers, but they're following me because of who is in my photos, not because they're following me. And that might sound like a really selfish, like arrogant, you know, self-centered thing to say, but I think it's an important thing for everybody to consider. You might be okay with that, or maybe not. Like, for example, with podcasts, if you're just interviewing a bunch of people in bands, are they showing up for the guests or are they showing up for you? And maybe you're okay with it being that they just show up for the guests, but maybe not. And I would say for most creators, in general, I think you should be trying to cultivate a following of people who follow you, not who are just coming for big names that are attached to whatever you're doing, because, you know, if the big names go away, then you don't have anything.
Totally.
Like, what did you really build if they're just there for the big names?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All they are is a jolt of promotion, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean, like, I remember I had Jordan from Newfound Glory on my show, and like, he's married to one of my old high school friends. And like, it's just this weird, you know, sort of, wow, life is really much smaller than I ever anticipated.
Small world. Yeah.
Totally, totally. But anyway, so it's like him and I were able to dive in pretty deep about like how much his, like, you know, the divorce of his family, you know, really affected him and all these other things. And like, you know, when people are being vulnerable with their life experience, you're not just going to sit, you know, me as a huge, I'm not a journalist. I'm not sitting there being like, oh man, this is great. This is a great scoop.
Right.
I'm just like looking at him as a person. And so like, I start to, you know, empathize with him and talk about, you know, my experience with divorce and whatever and other experiences. And I remember getting an email from a person after they listened to it, who clearly was just like, you know, what I like call a drive-by listener.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, Jordan from Newfound Glory is on a podcast. And, you know, she was very just like, You know, you interjected too much. You spoke too much about yourself. And like, I was like, I get where she's coming from.
Like, hey, Ray, why don't you shut the fuck up on your podcast?
Totally. And just the idea that it's like, oh, here I'm watching this person be vulnerable and just be like,
right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, moving right along, let's talk about something else. Right. It's like, dude, are you kidding me? And so, but to that point, people are used to the way that things are as far as the interaction between, you know, a guest of the show or in the host of the show or whatever. So it's like, I get it. I didn't, you know, I sent a kind email follow up to her being like, hey, I'm sorry. You know, I just watched a person be vulnerable. So of course I'm going to sit there and try to empathize with them rather than just be this, you know, callous guy that's moving right along. So, but yeah, you're very right in that.
There's a podcast, which I won't name, but they're notorious for that. You know, the person will be like, well, you know, last year was really difficult for me because I got a divorce and my mom died and, you know, I got cancer, you know, but, right. You know, we're back in the game. Be like, cool. Well, how's the new album coming along?
Yeah, it's like,
just, this is so awkward.
Totally. And it's like, dude, that person just hung three softballs for you and you're
right.
Just like, you're not going to talk about any of those things? Like,
right. Are you even, I feel like you're not even listening. You know, this is not a conversation. You're just like reading the questions off a piece of paper.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to kind of get into the details of kind of the mechanics of a podcast, not like the production stuff, but kind of the business side of it that I don't hear people talk about too much. And you have visibility of both sides of it because of your history as a podcast host. And how would you describe your day job as it relates to podcasts?
Yeah, so I've been working in podcasting as far as the industry is concerned for the past like 5 years or so. I used to work for a company called Midroll/Stitcher because they rebranded themselves overall about 2 years ago, because Stitcher is a podcast player and more consumers were familiar with that than Midroll. But basically, Midroll was a you know, a monetization arm for a podcast company that was attached to this other brand called Earwolf. So it's like, I mean, it had shows like, or the shows that we were selling were like My Favorite Murder, you know, Bill Simmons' Ringer Network, WTF with Marc Maron. So, and that company was very early to the game in regards to the idea of what a podcast network was, because not only was there sort of this collection of shows where hopefully people could kind of promote one another on them, but then there was a monetization arm to it. So AKA you're getting ads for these shows, talking to ad agencies and negotiating CPMs and doing all that sort of stuff. So
like if you hear somebody read an ad for Casper mattresses or whatever, you could be the one who made that happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I stepped into that job doing sales, even though I'd never done sales in my life. The person who brought me into the company, the whole reason I got brought in there was because Midroll picked up my podcast to sell. So I knew people at this company for probably, it was maybe about 2 years prior to me getting hired. So at that point, that's when I started to see ads come on my show. I guess I had some sort of vision of like, oh, maybe someday like people will advertise in the podcast. But at that time, you know, whatever, 2013 or 14, that wasn't really, you know, prevalent for shows that are talking about punk or hardcore. You know, it was like, maybe yeah. If I was like a famous comedian, then so be it. So they picked up my show, and then I started to, you know, randomly get ads here and there from like, you know, Squarespace or Audible. And so I started to see that money start to flow in. But then, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, when they talked to me about working for them, I was like, okay, I don't know sales at all, but I'm passionate about podcasts and I can talk to people. So, you know, I think those are two pieces that are important.
Sure. So what does sales mean in that context? Does that mean you go door to door and say, hey, everybody, I'm Raymond Harkins. Would you like to buy some podcast ads?
Yeah. My role in particular was not so much of a cold call from that perspective. I was working with these large digital ad agencies. Agencies like Ad Results and Performance Bridge and Oxford Road. These are things that are going to be meaningless to most people, but these are agencies that have like, you know, anywhere between 20 to 40 clients that they're helping do media planning. So these are people who are, you know, some of these agencies only focus on one thing, i.e. podcasts, or some of these agencies focus on, we do radio, we do TV, we do, you know, digital, we do all of it. And then, you know, we also do podcasts.
Let's say I'm like Ford or Chevy,
yep.
And I say, hey, we've got $5 million for this campaign, then this agency would reach out to people like you and say, let's put X, you know, $1 million into podcasts and $3 million into TV and $1 million into radio or whatever. And you might be the person to help them allocate that $1 million of podcast money.
That's exactly correct. They would put together their media mix plan where they know that they are tasked to spend that much money in this particular, you know, whatever, Q2, Q3 of this year. And so they start to work with, you know, different partners and be able to put together budgets. And of course, they're looking at the podcast landscape holistically. So they just look at shows and they're like, oh, okay, like we'd like to advertise on these shows because, you know, we just think it's a good fit or whatever. So they end up talking to like, you know, two or three different podcast networks or publishers, as it were, rather than just going to one, you know? So it's like they're talking to, yeah, two or three networks, and then they start to, you know, drill down on like what the costs would be and all that sort of stuff. So that was my job, basically looking at some of these, you know, big companies like, you know, ZipRecruiter, Casper's one, you know, Blue Right. Apron, when they were spending a lot, and then being able to introduce them to new shows, being able to, you know, try to figure out how they can allocate this money that, you know, oh, this show isn't performing very well, so let's, you know, allocate the money elsewhere or whatever, or we have to cancel this show and all that sort of stuff. So it was a lot of moving parts.
It's interesting how many layers there are between, you know, probably most people don't think about this, between the advertiser and the show. For example, let's say there's a Casper mattress ad on my show. There could be three or four different people between me and Casper, and, you know, me and Casper and I never talk.
No, for sure. The only interaction that you would have from that perspective would be if Casper has, you know, deemed your show to be of a certain level where you would get a free mattress to speak to your personal experience on it. So you would, you know, say your podcast was working with, you know, Midroll, I would then, you know, I would be like, hey, Casper, you need to advertise on Punk Rock NBA because of these demographics, you know, he's a fan of Casper, whatever story I'm telling.
So if it's a Tim Ferriss or something like that, where he has a big audience and he's into these sort of, you know, lifestyle hacks, you might say, hey, this might be someone to send a mattress to.
Exactly. Because then they're going to speak to their personal experience. And frankly, that's obviously, you know, a it's not even a secret sauce, but that's part of, you know, I mean, frankly, that's how radio has been built too. You know, people being like, hey, this product is rad. You should try it. And that's exactly what podcast advertising is all about too. Cause the moment that, you know, you try a Casper mattress and you're like, hey, this is actually really cool. And they're advertising on my show. And then, you know, when you're doing your read, you're like, oh, Casper sent me this mattress. You know, my wife and I sleep on it and like, we are totally in love with it. It's like that people that have developed a relationship with you are going to be much more inclined to try that out rather than listening to the, you know, Geico Gecko being like, hey, buy insurance.
Hey, if it's good enough for the Gecko, it's good enough for me.
That's true. That's true.
So you did that for a few years, but you have moved on since then. Yes?
Yep. So I worked there for about 4 years and then I moved on to iHeartRadio approached me to work for them on their podcast team. It's a small team, but the, you know, obviously the organization is massive because they own like, I don't know, 750 radio stations across the country and just all this other stuff. So, but they recognize the power of the medium of podcasting and how it kind of fits in their overall media portfolio and audio portfolio. So they invested a ton of money, acquired a company in like 2018 and, you know, all of 2019 were basically ramping up to, you know, be a major player within that scene. So I came over in July of 2019 to work for them. And, you know, after a few bumps and understanding kind of where I sat within the company, you know, the past couple months have been really awesome and really interesting to watch how, you know, frankly, a large corporation is able to mobilize and get people involved in not only spreading the gospel of the podcasting medium at large, but then being able to like take these shows that, you know, were doing ostensibly well on their own, but being able to supercharge them and talk to, you know, hey, Capital One, are you interested in spending, you know, $5 gajillion? And they're like, absolutely, because we love you, iHeartRadio. And it's like, oh my gosh. Like, whereas, you know, the previous company I was working for, like, you know, we'd work with certain large brands. It was always really exciting. But, you know, those would be like maybe two or three a year, where it's like here at iHeart, I am seeing that happen on an almost weekly basis of like these really,
because they have relationships with all these brands that go back years and years and years. So it's just kind of plugging them into a new media channel.
That's exactly correct. And just being like, hey, you've been advertising on radio or digital for all of these years. Like here, this is another awesome solution for you. You know, if you are interested in testing this out, let's, you know, let's figure out what that would look like, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it's just at a scale now that I have never witnessed in the past. And, you know, it's only going to get crazier over the next couple of years just because, you know, podcasting as a advertising medium is still in its absolute infancy and is still trying to figure out so many different aspects of reporting and, you know, brand safety and all of these things that
right.
The other mediums already have proved out. But podcasting is still,
you know, the brand safety one is interesting to me because that overlaps a lot with YouTube. And so, well, why don't you explain to people what brand safety is?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of, you know, when you're talking about these, you know, huge brands that you're going, that you see advertised everywhere, you know, clearly they're, you know, whatever, you see a Coca-Cola billboard, they don't have a call to action on it. They don't, you know, they're not like, hey, buy Coke. It's just being like,
yeah,
hey,
50 cents off now at Safeway.
Exactly. So they're all they're trying to do is just make sure that that brand is top of your mind. And so in turn, these huge brands, like when they're running advertising, they want to be able to, because they need to be ubiquitous, they need to run across a ton of different channels. But at the same time, like Coca-Cola cannot be advertised on something that is deemed even remotely offensive in any capacity, even if it's a person that, you know, they're doing a Coca-Cola read on their podcast, but then, you know, they're explicit and they're swearing all around the ad, but not actually in the ad. That's something that they don't feel comfortable with. So they're not going to align themselves with that.
I'm interested in this because on the one hand, I totally get that because, you know, the CMO's, you know, wife's friend could get an email. It's like, my son was watching YouTube and he saw one of your ads on a video about blah, blah, blah. You know, I understand that, but at the same time, I feel like the reason why podcasts and YouTube are as popular as they are and as engaging as they are is because they don't play by the same rules as traditional media. And so I feel like if you apply old media brand safety guidelines to podcasts and YouTube, you're kind of missing the point. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, they're,
on the other hand, I understand that they do
you
need
get it,
to
right.
be careful.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how they think about that. And I don't know how much you can speak on their behalf, but curious how those big brands think about the brand safety kind of question while also taking advantage of these platforms.
Totally. No, I completely agree. And I think I remember a campaign. This was like probably about 2 or 3 years ago. There's a podcast called Beautiful Stories with Anonymous or From Anonymous People with this comedian named Chris Gethard. It was part of the Midroll Network. Really, really compelling show where he basically just took a random call. It was screened, but took a random call from somebody. And then basically he had no idea who they were and just kind of talked to them about their lives. And like so many unbelievable stories came from that because everybody has a story. So anyways, I think it was, I don't know, it was some credit card company. I can't remember who, but they were really pushing the idea of just like, okay, we're going to be doing this 30-second spot. Usually when people are providing, you know, ad copy and they're working in podcasts, they want to give the host creative freedom to kind of do what they want, you know, hitting certain points, but at the same time, they're speaking to it in their voice. But this credit card company was like, no, word for word, it needs to be this. And like, so many people were just like, you're missing the point. Like, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Like, why are you having this host read essentially a script and not having any personality right. for it? The campaign was completely unsuccessful because it was, you know, the host was just handcuffed and was like, all right, well, here's this thing. You get points back right. and blah. And it's like, it just sounded horrible. And so, yeah.
I mean, authenticity, I guess, is at the core of what makes these work. And when you force people to read a script, that's not authentic and you just wasted your money.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's like granted, that was a few years ago. So brands weren't as cognizant of what this medium actually meant. They just heard, you know, to your point, they heard someone was like, hey, we got to get on some podcasts, like get on some podcasts, everybody. Right. And so they didn't know what they were doing.
You know, what I wonder with this stuff is, who do you actually think is going to be offended? You know, if you're, I don't know, call it Pampers or whatever.
Yep.
You know, you think family. Okay, well, how old is somebody that has, say, a child in diapers? Probably late 20s, early 30s, right?
For sure. And so a person that has clearly heard a swear word before.
Like, do you think that person is going to be super offended? Think about what they grew up on. Do you think that person is going to be super offended by somebody saying fuck on a podcast?
Yeah, not at all, not at all.
You know what I mean? It's totally. Like, we're not talking about like senior citizens here that are consuming this stuff. But anyway, so that's just something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
But so talk about kind of what is the process of for a new show, because I get this question a lot. You know, people want to monetize their content now on YouTube. That's easy because they do the ad sales part for you, essentially, because of AdSense. But for, say, a newer podcast, like let's say I came to you and I said, hey, Ray, I want to start monetizing my podcast as quickly as possible. What are your thoughts on that? Like, let's talk that through. Cause actually let's have this conversation for real. Cause I am interested in this.
Sure. The first piece of advice that I offer people is, doing exactly what you're doing currently, you know, just basically kind of building your audience and whatever that may mean, where, you know, I always like to encourage people to kind of find their plateau. And I mean that from, like you're talking about, you know, with, or like we were talking about earlier with guests, where it's like, okay, you know, you've been publishing consistently for about 3 months. And, you know, yes, you see some peaks and valleys where it's like, okay, this person is more popular than this person. So, you know, you ostensibly can kind of calculate that idea that, all right, well, you know, this was really this received, you know, 30,000 downloads as opposed to 3,000 because this person promoted the hell out or whatever. But once you kind of see your plateau in regards to, hey, consistently, like I can, you know, publish an episode irregardless of the guest and be able to get, you know, whatever, 1,500, 2,000 downloads, whatever the number may be. So you find your plateau, and then at that point, that's when you kind of have sort of your base of audience, as it were. Then I encourage people to also find out more about that particular audience. And you can do that by a super, super simple, like 10-question audience survey. Because at the end of the day, the most important thing to advertisers is a demographic. You know, they can be compelled by your content and who you're theoretically speaking to. But when you are actually able to, you know, provide some audience survey demographics, these are people who are taking the extra step and answering 10 questions for you, Finn McKenty, on your particular podcast. So once you kind of have that, you know, when you have a decent enough respondents, like, you know, whatever, if you put out this survey and you only have 3 people that respond, like, you know, that's not very compelling data.
But you got 50 or 100 people or whatever.
Precisely. My metric has always been like, once you have 100 respondents, like kind of regardless of the size of your show, the margin of error in regards to, you know, those responses is less than 5%. And when I say margin of error, I mean like the data is not going to be so skewed in one way or the other, you know?
Yeah.
So once you kind of have those two components, you have your sort of plateaued number of downloads, and then you also have an audience survey. At that point, then you have some actionable data that you can either do one of two things with. One, you can attempt to kind of reach out to people just sort of independently, whether it's like, oh, you know, I heard this person advertising on this podcast, like, you know, and not from like, oh yeah, I've heard ZipRecruiter advertising on podcasts. It's like, well, yeah, of course, like you've heard them everywhere. You're not going to coldly reach out to ZipRecruiter, but there are some things that make sense in certain aspects of what your content is bringing. So like, you know, for your podcast, it would make absolute sense for record labels to be interested in advertising on your show. Of course, they have no budget and they're not interested in spending money. But, you know, if you're coming with a compelling enough reason where it's like, oh yeah, actually I have this band member coming on, your record's coming out in 3 months.
Or like, I've proven that I can break a band and,
yeah,
you know, yeah, something like that.
Totally. You're able to kind of prove that. Then you're able to be like, you know, and even if it's something as simple as like, dude, you know, give me like $200 for a month's worth of advertising and I'll do, you know, 4 60-second ads. I'll send them to you, whatever the case may be. You just then are, because first of all, a lot of people are like excited to monetize. So they're like, oh man, I can't wait to get ads. And the moment they start doing ad reads, they're like, either one, this sucks and I hate it, or two, they're terrible at it. And you need to be terrible at it first before you're like getting some huge, you know, sponsor on board and they're like, oh, we're going to spend $10,000 on your show. And then they hear the first couple ad reads and you're just like tripping over yourself.
It's better to make your mistakes when it's some indie label paying you $75.
Low stakes.
Than ZipRecruiter paying you $5,000.
That's exactly correct. Because it's like when you, if you're arriving at a space too early and, you know, you're whatever, you come to a party and you're, you know, dressed to the nines, and then you come you know, and everyone else is like casually dressed, and you're just like, oh crap, like I'm showing up to the wrong party.
Or worse, the other way around, like, oh, you can just wear whatever you want, and you show up in like a hoodie and everyone else is wearing a suit, and you're like, oh fuck, yeah.
Damn it,
I'm that guy.
Yeah, I'm not pro enough. So yeah, so those are just like good sort of growth steps. And plus, it's like, again, I mean, I there's a podcast that I'm sort of, you know, helping from a consulting perspective right now. And he, again, as most people that are attached to us, Finn, are old hardcore kids. So he's super into fishing, and he has a really successful fishing podcast. And, you know, there are sponsors that would literally never advertise on any other podcast in the entire ecosystem. But they're like, oh, yeah, we want to reach fishermen. So it's like, oh, yeah, it's a lure company or whatever. And so that's the sort of stuff where, you know, podcasting is powerful for that reason, because it's, you know, it's a bunch of different niches, and each, you know, show can have its own particular niche that it's going to be speaking to in a real way, as opposed to like, oh, you need the biggest sponsor possible. It's like, no, you don't. Like, you can probably make, honestly, a good $10,000 to $15,000 a year if you are just focused on these, you know, whatever, 20 companies that are speaking specifically to the stamp collecting community or whatever it is. So that it's baby steps first. And then, you know, if you get to a point where it's like, hey, I've had these like, you know, interesting niche brands advertise on my show, then in turn, then you can maybe talk, you know, you can talk to networks, you can talk to, you know, your mid-rolls, your iHearts and your Wonderies and whoever else to be like, hey, I've got a provable enough portfolio of advertising. Maybe you want to bring me on, and then you can access these other things. Or people stay completely independent and then just, you know, are like, well, hey, maybe I'll just do a Patreon to be able to, you know, kick some extra revenue. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'll just do merch for myself. And it's the same exact principles as a band. So
if I was to summarize, tell me if I got this right. Get to a point where you have a rough idea of what your sort of baseline audience size is. Whether that is 1,000 or 10,000 or 50,000 downloads per episode, just have an idea of what that baseline is. Second, do a survey so you know who those people are. And then third, reach out to potential advertisers that are of the appropriate level for where you're at, whether that's big, small, somewhere in between. And then go from there.
Totally, totally. Because once you start to, again, kind of amass that experience, not only in consistently publishing your show, but then also being able to like actually execute on the deliverables, like i.e. doing your ads right and making sure you're communicating that to the actual sponsors and like just being accountable from that perspective, you can start to get into a workflow to where when you do have something that is a little bit more, you know, slick or professional or larger, that you already have this sort of built-in system of how to kind of handle it rather than being tossed out in the middle of the ocean and you've never done it before. And then you're just kind of like, I'm lost. I don't have any idea what I'm doing.
Right. So I know a lot of people are interested in the idea of a network because, you know, the network does the selling for them. Do you think it's smart to reach out to networks early on, or should you wait till they come to you? Or what are your thoughts on that, having been on both sides of that?
To me, when you have your stuff in order, i.e. going through all of those steps, you're going to look infinitely more polished than, you know, if you were just coming to, you know, say you just had the numbers. And like, of course, and when I say the numbers from a download perspective, those are clearly important. But like, I know from a mid-roll perspective, like whatever, this is 2017, 2018, the bare minimum of what we were looking for to pick up from just some random show that had no real relationship to anybody at the company was like, you know, at least 50,000 downloads per episode over a two-month period.
That's a pretty big number.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and that's kind of devoid of context, like devoid of content that's just number wise. And so it's one of those things where so many shows just like did not even come remotely close to that. But they were like, well, this is kind of compelling content. But then there were certain shows that kind of threaded a needle where it was like, okay, here's this, like, I'm going to use a super random example, but there's this show called Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, who she is I don't think she was a stay-at-home mom when she first started, but anyways, a family woman, you know, husband, wife, I think she had like 3 or 4 kids, you know, was successful on her own as far as like, you know, she had a really cool blog and she had written a book or whatever, but like her podcast wasn't huge, but her demographic was so unbelievably valuable because it was like, you know, 99% female. They pretty much listened to whatever it was that she said. If she pointed them in direction to like, hey, check out this guest and check out this thing, that was just like incredibly powerful. And her show was consistently sold out once we brought her onto the network because She had such a great relationship with her audience. Again, she wasn't, you know, she wasn't like my favorite murder downloads, mm-hmm. like, you know, a million plus an episode. She was like under 100,000 downloads per episode, but it was so incredibly successful because of all of those reasons. And she had that compelling information. So
as an advertiser myself, those are the people that I always look for, are people who are actually influential. And I think there's a big difference between well-known or famous and influential. So for example, like My Favorite Murderer, that has a ton of, that has a big audience, but I don't know that that show is necessarily influential. You know what I mean? Because it's totally a piece of entertainment. It's not a human being that represents a lifestyle that I am trying to attain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It definitely, I mean, My Favorite Murder isn't maybe the best example because they, you know, that show does have like an unbelievable fan base from that perspective. But your point is still stands.
Yeah, yeah. I don't listen to the show, so I don't know. But
No, but
But you get the point.
Totally. Well, I remember my time when I was working at PETA, the animal rights organization. I was responsible for like celebrity partnerships. And I'll never forget, I can't even remember who this person was, but whatever, social media influencer, you know, millions and millions of, you know, views on YouTube and whatever. And then, so working with this person on like a dog adoption campaign, and we were really excited because we, you know, get magazine placement, all of these moving parts. It was going to make it really successful. And then we did a photo shoot and an ad with, Elisa from Arch Enemy, mm-hmm. the metal band, you know, speaking about veganism, because she's a staunch animal rights supporter. And her ad was like, just as far as like traction and visibility and just like all the metrics that we used to measure it, was like literally four times successful as this social media influencer, to your exact point.
Even though Arch Enemy is not a giant band compared to this other person.
Nope. Totally. Yeah. And the only reason I'm not naming the person is because I literally can't remember this
which
person.
Says a lot.
So it was like they were totally, they were, you know, memorable for a year and then they were gone. But yes, you are completely correct that it doesn't necessarily matter the size of the person's audience. It's like, if they are mobilizing those people, you are going to be better spent investing in that than, you know, a person that has like scale and reach.
Tim Ferriss is the perfect example of that to me, at my old job, Creative Live, which for anyone who's not familiar, is an online education company for creative professionals, primarily like photographers and graphic designers. And we worked with a lot of influencers, some super like mainstream famous people like Mark Cuban and Damon John and stuff like that, Jared Leto. And the person who moved the needle more than anybody else is Tim Ferriss, who is not nearly, I mean, he's a well-known guy, but not nearly compared to Mark Cuban, you know, compared to people that are on Shark Tank, that really just didn't move the needle for us. And anything that Tim ever recommended, his audience loves him and listens to him and they will check it out. So that was like the kind of truest example. We tried so many times, like, who's the other Tim? And we just kept going back to him because his audience listens.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you identify it, and it's a really difficult position to put yourself in. But like once you do achieve that, it definitely is, you know, incredibly, incredibly powerful. No matter what partnership you're creating, whether it's, you know, content or whether it's advertising, that's the stuff that will really, you know, keep people coming back.
Well, we've got a few more minutes left here before, as I said earlier, we have a hard out, and you made fun of me for saying hard out.
It's okay. I've said it before too, and I just try to catch myself anytime I'm in that sort of like, especially when I'm talking with friends and like business synergy, where I'm just like, oh gosh, I want to kill myself. I don't need to say that.
I got a hard out at 11.
Yeah.
But we do have a hard out at 11. So there's two things that I wanted to ask about on the same topic. So we've talked a lot about how important audience numbers are and aren't in some ways, but at the end of the day, we would all agree that having a bigger audience is better than not. So let's talk about how to grow a podcast. And there's kind of two questions there, two topics that I want to ask about. The first is the whole like discovery thing, how to organically grow it beyond having guests on that will promote it. It seems like Apple seems to still not really give a shit about podcasts. Spotify is doing a lot of stuff, but discovery seems like it's still really hard for podcasts. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the number one thing that most people talk about in regards to building things, especially in relation to podcasts. So yeah, there are like three ways that are sort of proven from that perspective. One, like you mentioned already, guests. Two is editorial placement, i.e. placement on, you know, Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher.
Like if you get featured on one of these
Exactly.
I don't know what you call them, distributors or whatever.
Yeah, totally, totally. So it's like, yeah, you get a cool graphic, you get mentioned in new and noteworthy, and it's not like those things even really kind of move the needle in a big way, but, you know, it's still something to talk about, kind of track, where it's like, oh, if you do place in a chart in some capacity, that it's like, oh, there might be some, you know, negligible bump in your listenership or whatever.
Yeah, we got featured fairly high on the when I worked on Chase Jarvis's podcast at Creative Live. I don't know if I want to say it might have been even on the, I don't remember what it was, but like the main podcast feature thing at the time, you got some big like 16x9 graphic in that they featured everywhere, and it got us, I want to say maybe like 10,000 downloads or something like that over yep. the course of a couple of weeks, which is cool. But, you know, to your point, it didn't, it's not like, wow, now all of a sudden the floodgates are open and we're famous.
You know, totally.
It was just like a nice little bump.
Yep, exactly. It really, they're in the same way that marketing bands all of this is just, you know, is kind of throw it against the wall and see kind of what works from that perspective. And then the third way is just, you know, paid media or trade media. So, you know, if you have a community of podcasters that have a, you know, certain size audience, if you basically just mention their podcast on your podcast, you know, that's kind of the way that people can sort of, you know, organically grow, or you just simply pay for ads, you know, and a lot of people do mm-hmm. do that on a pretty regular basis.
Do you think that's money well spent, paying for the ads?
I haven't seen it from a sort of like metrics, like, you know, a wrap-up report where it's like, oh, this is what we saw with these paid media campaigns. I know I was like in 2018, I want to say, we did a real big push for Stitcher as a listening platform. We advertised on other podcasts and, you know, sort of like-minded shows that we would think that people who are podcast nerds would be like, oh, I'm going to ditch my player and listen to podcasts via Stitcher. So there was, from a branding perspective, it was good because there was like, you know, more familiarity and, you know, brand lift and all these other nerdy marketing term, but KPIs, you know, that got delivered to us via a wrap-up report. But, you know, to say that there was some, like, you know, Stitcher as a listening platform went from like, you know, 6% to like 7.5%, like, we did not see any sort of meaningful bump.
No hockey stick.
Exactly, no hockey stick. I think that there is value. It just depends on how much you are actually putting towards it. You know, if you're just putting a couple $100 into it, like, that's totally reasonable and totally fine, especially if it's like, oh, this makes absolute sense advertising on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. But I guess my point there, or question there, is that as much as I wish you could just buy your way into an audience, I don't think you can.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I know that working at iHeart, it's wild because, you know, we have the access to 750 plus radio stations. And so many of our podcasts are advertised on these specific radio shows, you know, just in your average radio block. So it's serving two masters there. One, it's introducing people who are radio listeners to the medium of podcasting, and then two, to a specific show that might interest them. So it's really, really cool to see that in real form. And certain shows, like, absolutely get a pretty huge bump because, you know, of whatever promotion is going on at the time. But to be able to, like, track all those moving parts is really, really difficult because, you know, you're like, oh, wow, there's advertising on these radio stations for, you know, Sunday through Thursday or whatever. And like, how does this correlate to downloads? And like, you
right,
know,
right.
I don't work on that team, but still it's interesting to kind of watch that megaphone be used in a really, really interesting way to kind of prop both the industry at large and introduce more people to podcasts and then the specific show.
Interesting. I was not aware that people were advertising. You know, you would think that radio would be hesitant to advertise podcasts because it would cannibalize radio. But in the case of iHeart, they own both. The cannibalization isn't as much of an issue.
Totally. They're serving the same master from that perspective. And all it is being able to introduce more people to something that they might be interested in even further, where it's like, you know, whatever, there's a hugely popular radio show in New York called The Breakfast Club, and we launched mm-hmm. a podcast with Questlove from The Roots. And so it's like, you know, to see that sort of growth once, you know, The Breakfast Club mentions, like, oh yeah, Questlove has a podcast, and people are like, oh, absolutely, I love Questlove. So there's some of that just works out so well. And then there's others that, like, you know, you could promote till the cows come home on radio and no one will care about it.
Right. Well, let me ask you one last thing then before I let you go, since we're running up against our time here. Booking guests, because like we said, we know that this is a proven way to grow a show. You get some cool, popular people on who will promote it. That will definitely grow your show. But how do you get those people on? Because, you know, you're a new show. You know, I just started a podcast. My dream guest is Ollie Sykes. What would you say, like, how do I work up to getting Ollie Sykes on my show, and how long is that going to take?
Totally. I mean, there's two ways that you can view it. One is that you actually already have some relationships on your own where you're able to kind of wedge, you're like, oh, I know the publicist or I know the record label. So you can work those angles. Like any personal connection that you may have to a band, an artist, a guest in any way, work those angles, you know, as early as possible, because you can at least be like, hey, I've started this thing. Here's my vision of it. They're going to give you more time because they're your friend, as opposed to here's a 7-paragraph thesis on my podcast to a random publicist. And they're just going to be like, what the hell is this person talking about?
Well, let's say that like most people listening to this, you don't really have any relationships like that.
Yep.
You're just a kid that started a podcast. And you go, man, one of these days I would love to have Ollie on my show. How would you get there?
Yeah, I would get there by, you know, again, kind of developing your chops, being able to have the consistent release schedule and show that you are a sort of proven quantity to some people, because you're going to have to get through gatekeepers. You're going to have to get through the publicist or the record label. And when you're able to showcase the fact that, like, yes, I'm proven by the fact that this podcast has been going for a moment, and that can be anywhere between 2 to 4 months, because say you're able to land a huge guest and you're able to use that as kind of a pitch point to all these publicists or whatever, where you're like, oh, I've had these two guests on that are friends with Ollie. So in turn, that would be able to, you know, open up the doors there, even if they're a smaller band or whatever. So being able to prove yourself to these gatekeepers by your consistency, being professional, being, concise in what your ask is, being able to just be like, listen, I would love to have Ollie Sykes on. I know he's in between press cycles right now, but like being able to identify some things where you're empathizing with the person that you're pitching. You're like, I know there's a lot of pitches that come out of this, but this is kind of why I think this would be an interesting look, not from an egotistical standpoint, because I'm like, oh, I'm the best interviewer, you know, but being able to build a compelling case, however you want to take that is up to you. But being able to be as professional as possible, which, you know, that can kind of be part and parcel of every sort of cold reach out. But I think if you just develop your authority in some capacity from your consistency of your release schedule, how professional you are, and then honestly, just stay at it. There has been people that I've chased, like I've literally written letters to people to get them on to the show because they've kind of made me jump through hoops. And I was fine with that. I was like, whatever. I love this person. I want to have them on the show.
That's what it takes.
Totally. And so, you know, if you have a little reminder where it's like, all right, every 3 months, I'm going to follow up with, you know, Ollie's publicist or whatever. Those are the things where you just have to like, all right, I'm going to try this for, you know, a year, year and a half. Like I remember I personally chased John K. Samson from The Weaker Thans and Propagandhi. Here's a dude who hates interviews. Notorious for like his one record cycle, he did interviews via postcard. Like that's how, and he wasn't doing it to be cute. He was just like, I just don't like interviews.
It's just that guy. Yeah.
I'm like, I get it, dude. He's done millions of interviews. So I was able to get introduced to him via one of the members of Propagandhi. And just a cold email, I went out to him, but I was like, very short and concise, just being like, I love all of the stuff that you've done musically. I am a big fan. I think that you would enjoy this medium. Here is my, you know, here are your peers that have appeared on this show. I would love to, you know, hear from you. I tried to go through Epitaph, just a joke, like we're not going to be helpful. Not because the people are terrible at their job. They just didn't have any attention span for it.
Right.
So that's why I went to that direct.
And also like, you know, thinking from their perspective, like why should they go out of their way to help you?
Yeah. This is a person who I'd met like in passing before. So I was like, I had no hope that that was going to happen. But anyways, it just in the consistency, it took me a year and a half to finally book him because he was like, oh, yeah, actually, like, you know, I'm moving, like whatever. He was corresponding over email ever, just very sporadically. And but then finally I made it happen and I was like, this was great. And it was so weird because then when I first started to interview him, he was nervous. He was so nervous. And I was like, dude, you're nervous. I'm nervous. Like, this is crazy. But ultimately, the sort of diligence and persistence that I had on that was able to, you know, kind of push that over the line and get something that I really wanted. But I think that's the length that people should go to when they're trying to chase whatever it is that they are chasing from a guest perspective.
Cool. Well, super helpful stuff. I feel like anybody who has a podcast should go back and listen to this from the beginning. Take notes, because we just told you all the questions that come up. Like, we probably answered 80% of them. And then you know what you need to do. Now you just need to do the work. That's the hard part. But I think this podcast pretty much lays it all out for you. Is there anything else that you would add before we wrap it up?
I think ultimately, just because I have seen so many people descend on this medium in a very, culture vulture way of being like,
opportunistic.
Oh, this is
yeah.
Exactly. Totally. Really, really, really do it because you like it. Like, this is like, I literally did not make a penny off of my podcast for the first, I don't know, I would say like at least 4 years. Like, again, I was just doing it because this was a fun exercise for me to be able to creatively express myself. And then once I was able to make some money off of it, I was able to, you know, be more professional in my presentation and whatever else the case may be. But that wasn't the ultimate goal. So you really need to care about the thing that you're doing and give yourself enough time to be able to experiment with it. Doing it a month and then bailing out, like we were talking about at the top of the show, it's just not worth it. You're just wasting your time. You're wasting the people who you're asking to spend their time with on. And that's just, yeah, it's a waste. So do those two things first. And then, like Finn said, follow those other things that we were talking about. And then you'll probably end up in a really, really cool place in, you know, whatever, 6 to 18 months.
Cool. Well, there you go. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. And hopefully we'll make it down to Southern California soon and get a chance to hang out again.
Absolutely. Have some coffee and give each other high fives.
We'll see you then.
Thanks, dude.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that, and you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
Get down! The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.